envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences, navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insight. Tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Disclaimer. This podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future.
Hi, guys. It's another episode of No Further Questions. Hi, I'm Taria Hutchinson. Not Brandy, not Sam. I'm kind of sad. They're not here tonight. I'm not alone, though. I have a friend. Hey, Quentin.
Hey, Taria. Thank you for having me back, and I'm glad that I'm your friend.
Three times in 2019.
Unreal, and I feel blessed. I appreciate it.
I feel lucky, blessed, special. Yeah. Tell them about you. Who are you?
I'm Quentin Brooker, and I'm Taria's friend. I am a criminal defense lawyer by profession, but as I mentioned before, I'm an anti-racist, and I just work in the community, and I want to uplift black people. But again, my profession is criminal defense law. I practice mostly in Harris County, but all over Texas. I will be going to a place called Hondo, Texas, I think on Thursday, which is right outside of San Antonio.
It's okay.
Very small. So I do go all over. I've practiced in the Panhandle. I've practiced, of course, Beaumont, Dallas, San Antonio also. So I've been all around, mostly state cases. Mm-hmm. I do some post-conviction cases, appeals, writs, expunctions, and things of that nature. So my thing is criminal defense in all forms. And ultimately, I'm doing it so that we can give black people some good representation.
Hmm. Very nice. Well, it's my favorite season of all year. It's the holidays. I love Christmas. Christmas is my favorite. With Christmas, though,
yes,
comes these fabulous holiday parties, mm-hmm, where the liquor is free, the food is free, and you can just drink until your heart's content.
Okay.
Some firms, some companies give you like the Ubers and the Lyfts. Some do not. And when the firms do not, some people think, I got this, and they start driving. Mm-hmm. And here they're, that's the sound of a police officer. And they get pulled over.
Yes.
And then, DWIs or DUIs
right.
happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What happens when I get stopped and a DWI is upon me?
Okay.
So we'll start off with these terms I just used. The difference between a DWI and a DUI.
Yes. In Texas, we use both because Texas is complicated and wants to bifurcate everything. DUI is driving under the influence. That is a charge that is reserved for citizens that are under the age of 21.
Okay.
And it's only punishable by a fine. So if there is a trace detectable amount of alcohol on a juvenile, basically, they can be charged with DUI and receive a ticket. DWI is driving while intoxicated. That's reserved for adults. I don't have to think about it. I think a juvenile could actually be charged with DWI as well. But an adult can't be charged with DUI because they're over the age of 21. But DWI is driving while intoxicated. That is if your blood alcohol concentration is above a 0.08 or you have lost the normal use of your mental or physical faculties. That's what the law says. I believe it's Texas Penal Code 49.04 is the statute. So that's the difference. And it is a vast amount of law that's involved with DWI, a lot of science. It also deals with our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some lawyers that do nothing but DWI in Texas. It's that robust of an area. And in Harris County prosecutors love to prosecute DWIs.
So people are getting them all the time?
All the time. I have one tomorrow, in fact. Wow. I will go and represent a client down in Harris County.
So you were saying the legal blood alcohol count was
0.08. Yes.
So if I'm at 0.079, I'm good? Does it read like that?
When you say good, I mean, what exactly? Like, did you blow into a breathalyzer? Did someone take your blood? At the end of the day, the 0.08 is one way to convict.
Okay.
Remember, there are two others. A loss of the normal use of your mental faculties or the loss of the normal use of your physical faculties. So technically, you can be a 0.079, right?
Right.
But if the fact finder determines that you have lost the normal use of your physical faculties, you're still guilty of DWI. If a fact finder finds that you've lost the normal use of your mental faculties, you can still be convicted for DWI.
So how do they find out if you've lost your physical or mental abilities? And they being the police officers.
The police officers?
Well, yeah, those are people that would determine that, correct?
Yeah, well, they're going to determine whether you should be arrested for DWI. Certainly, thank God that they don't get to determine whether you're convicted of DWI.
Right.
But if they feel that there's probable cause, because remember, their standard is much lower.
Okay.
We're talking, you know, trial when we talk about whether a person can be convicted for DWI.
Gotcha.
So their standard could be, you know, you had red glassy eyes, which is one I see a lot, or SOAB, which is the acronym that they use, strong odor of alcohol or alcoholic beverage emanating from your breath. It doesn't take much for an officer to determine whether they want to arrest you for DWI. I mean, you could get out of a car. They could have never met you in life. And they could say, you're walking funny. I feel that you've lost the normal use of your physical faculties, and I'm going to arrest you. And that could be enough for an officer to place you under arrest for DWI. Of course, they don't have to know that you had a knee injury or you have arthritis mm-hmm. or whatever. None of that even matters. If there's probable cause to arrest you, then they can arrest you.
Okay. And this non-refusal weekend, what does that mean?
No-refusal weekend essentially is a marketing program.
Okay.
That cities, usually it's cities or counties, that they promote. I believe the purpose is, I want to believe that the purpose is to deter people from drinking during these busy, you know, holidays, like you mentioned.
Right.
The Christmas holiday, the Super Bowl, like we've had the Super Bowl here a few times over the past few years, All-Star Weekend. So they want to say to the public, listen, we're going to be out in full force. So you should know that you don't have the right to refuse if we ask you to conduct field sobriety tests. So really it's a marketing program because to be quite honest with you, administratively, you really don't have the right to refuse anyway. But legally, you always have the right to refuse. So
Expound on that.
It's a bit of a game. yeah, so you have to start with implied consent. So in order to be a licensed driver in the state of Texas, after you've taken your test and all of the requirements, you agree when you sign, because I don't know if anyone ever reads the small print, but you agree that if you're ever pulled over on suspicion of DWI, that you will comply with field sobriety test. And if you refuse, then your license can be suspended for, I believe it's a minimum of 180 days, right? So administratively, you can never refuse. But legally, you have the right to protect yourself against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment. You have the right to ask for counsel under the Sixth Amendment, although you don't really have the right to ask for counsel as it pertains to no refusal issues. So it's weird. You always have the right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment, but when it comes to no refusal, you can't say to the officer, hey, let me call my lawyer mm-hmm. and ask. I mean, you can ask them, but you don't have the right to do that.
Right.
They can still go through their process.
Okay.
So administratively, you can never refuse if you're a licensed driver in Texas. Even if you're not a licensed driver in Texas, and someday you hope to be a licensed driver in Texas, your non-refusal can act to bar you from getting a license
wow.
in Texas. So that's the administrative side,
mm-hmm.
and that's the way they kind of try to get you to comply mm-hmm. with that sort of thing. But you always have the right to refuse. Now, there's a limit on that as well because you have to kind of walk through it.
Right.
So you're pulled over. It's no refusal weekend, and they say—
How do you know before you go on? How yeah. do I know that it's no refusal weekend?
Again, it's a marketing campaign.
So there's a sign or something that's...
Well, they normally promote it. I mean, I've seen on the local news channels,
okay.
hey, this is no refusal weekend, Memorial Day.
Right.
So I've seen them do it. But again, I want to believe it's about deterrence. I believe that money has something to do with it as well, because I've seen, man, during some of those weekends, you can actually see how many arrests there have been during a particular week in Harris County. And no refusal weekend, I've seen as many as 1,300 arrests for different things, and probably hundreds for DWI.
Right.
So essentially, they will use media outlets, they'll use press releases, the internet, Twitter. I've seen some of the constables kind of put some things out, like, hey, because I live in an area that's patrolled by Precinct 4 constables, they'll put it out on Twitter. Hey, it's no refusal weekend.
Okay.
You know, just to let you know. At the end of the day, you do have the right to refuse, but it does come a point where if an officer goes and gets you, if it's no refusal, first of all, if it's no refusal weekend, what that really is, it's putting everybody in position to get a quick blood warrant at the end of the day. Because if you refuse to blow in a breathalyzer, the next step is to get a blood warrant.
Okay.
Under normal circumstances, when it's not no refusal weekend, it could take some time to get that warrant.
Okay.
That's good for us as defense lawyers, because that time that elapses can affect a person's blood alcohol concentration, depending on if they're absorbing alcohol or eliminating alcohol.
Okay.
So we can argue that at trial.
And is a blood warrant just a blood specimen taken of you?
Blood specimen. Okay. And it can be taken by force. As long as, according to the law, it has to be like an emergency technician or a nurse.
Okay.
So there's a laundry list of the type of people that can take it. It has to be in a clean and sanitary place, quote unquote. I actually used that in a trial once, and the case got dismissed during trial because the officer took the stand and admitted that the place where the blood was taken was dirty and nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, the judge stopped the trial at that point because he was doing terrible in other areas too. And we wound up getting a dismissal in the middle of trial. But the point is, if a blood warrant is requested, then you're stuck. You're going to give that blood at that point. But really, it's like that all the time. I mean, there's really no refusal weekend is just having the magistrate ready.
Okay.
So it's quicker.
Right.
So now they're on the phone, you know, 15, 20 minutes, they got a warrant. Whereas it could take 2 hours, 2.5, 3 under a normal weekend because magistrate might be in bed sleep. You
gotcha.
Know? But during non-refusal weekend, they're available and they're up.
Okay.
So that's really the difference.
Gotcha. So let me give my scenario.
Yeah.
It is next weekend. It's this weekend. And Becky is at her holiday party. Okay. She's had 4 glasses of wine spread out throughout the 5 hours that she's been there. Okay. And she's like, you know what? There's a lot going on with this human trafficking. I'm not going to get in the Uber or Lyft. I'm going to drive myself. So she starts driving down 610, thinking she's making it, and all of a sudden, the cops pull her over.
Okay.
They smell alcohol on her.
Mm-hmm.
What should she do?
Is Becky white?
That matters?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it matters. Because we know empirically, Becky is going to be handled differently if she's white as opposed to her being black. We know that, so that's not anything to argue.
No, Becky is not white.
Okay.
She's black.
Okay.
It's Rebecca with 2 B's.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
So she's not white.
Okay. Is no refusal weekend?
It's not.
It's just regular old.
It's just a regular weekend.
Yeah. So my advice, and this isn't, I know we put a disclaimer up.
We did.
But what I tell my clients, if you are a paying client, is, and unfortunately, I can't talk to them while they're going through it in most cases.
Correct.
So after the fact, I'm like, you shouldn't have did this, you shouldn't have did that. You want to give them your license. You want to give them your insurance to make sure that you have, you know, the financial responsibility. As we've talked about before, if you have a weapon in the vehicle, you want to make sure that you disclose that you have a weapon in the vehicle because Becky's alone and human trafficking. So she may have her 380 available. So you want to let the officer know where that's located and all of that. At the end of the day, you don't want to participate in your own prosecution. Okay. So when you talk about a stop for DWI, remember, the standard is very low to place you under arrest. I believe that if an officer stops you on suspicion of DWI, if they want to take you to jail, they're going to take you.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, if you smell like alcohol, they can either let you go or they don't have to.
Right.
It's totally up to them. And as I mentioned before, 1 in 80 people that are driving intoxicated even get stopped. So it's so rare. Even though we see hundreds and hundreds of DWIs, There's so many more people that are driving our roads that are actually intoxicated that don't even get stopped. So if you get stopped and, I don't know, maybe there's a quota going on in whatever police department, they're probably going to take you in. So don't think that you can stand there and argue, reason. Well, I only had wine, and you're making it worse. There's actually a case, and I use this in trial. Well, I think we all do. It's called MATA, M-A-T-A, MATA v. State, where the evidence was suppressed. The actual blood draw was suppressed because the extrapolation facts were not present during the investigation. So, make a long story short, MATA gets pulled over. The questions came out, and he wasn't asked what he had eaten that day, how frequent the drinks were, what he had drank, how much. All of these go to facts mm-hmm. to prove whether an expert can come in and do an estimate of your BAC, okay. right? You got to have these facts. What did you eat? How much do you weigh? All of these things that I think is junk science, but the law has accepted as science. So if you don't have these extrapolation facts, then they can't do the extrapolation, and they can't say, well, we took your blood at 2 a.m., so that means at 10 a.m., you were a 0.09. That's extrapolation. Mm-hmm. But you can't do the extrapolation under the law unless you have the extrapolation facts.
Okay.
So if they say, hey, Becky, where are you coming from? Coming from a restaurant. What did you eat? You're already going down the road. Because if you say, oh, I had a hamburger and a hash brown, well, did you have any drinks? Well, yeah, I kind of had one around. Not. You're giving them the extrapolation facts. Gotcha. Just talking about what you ate that day.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to provide any information that's going to lead to your prosecution. If they ask you to step out of the car and perform field sobriety tests, they're probably going to arrest you because there's no pass a field sobriety test. It's not a pass or fail test. It's based on what they call clues, and however many clues you have doesn't really equate to anything quantitatively. They just write it down. Oh, she had three clues. Two clues on the walk and turn test, one on the one-legged stand, and I saw like five clues on the horizontal gaze nystagmus. So you know the walk and turn is where they just mm-hmm. have you walk in a line and turn around. You can't pass it. There's no pass. One-legged stand. Hold your leg up and stand there, and we're going to count to 59. There's no pass. The horizontal gaze nystagmus test is when they shine the light in your eye.
Mm-hmm.
What they're looking for is your eyeball involuntarily jerking horizontally. That is supposed to be some indicator that you're intoxicated, okay? This is the science that we're convicting people on, okay? So, hey, you got this cop who, I don't know what kind of training he's had. So he's going to now tell me whether my eye is jerking involuntarily, right. and it did it six times, and he counted with this pen light
right.
or his finger. No, this is what they use to convict you. So why would I participate in any of that? If they ask you out the car, you're probably going to jail.
Okay.
All right, so guess what? Go to jail, bond out, and now bonding is easier in Harris County, and we're about to change bail all mm-hmm. over Texas. That's Daryl Jordan, is a guy I went to law school with. So why participate in that? Go ahead and hire counsel, and let's deal with it later. You're not going to pass a field sobriety test.
So switching the facts just a little bit,
yeah.
if it's a non-refusal weekend,
yeah.
does Becky have the right to say no to the sobriety test?
Always.
So even a non-refusal, she can still say no. I mean, at yeah. that point, I
her
think
license is going to get suspended because that's the administrative hook that they have in you that you agreed to 18 years ago. So her license is going to get suspended.
But that's a better chance, I guess, consequence than versus.
Well, if you do the field sobriety test, they're going to record them. So I know we always talk about like dash cams and body right. cams, right? Oh, that dash cam is going to be on for that field sobriety test. Even though it's not a requirement, they're going to turn it on for that.
So you're saying that they have these dash cams, sometimes they just don't turn them on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Man, I could tell you about a case. But yeah. So if you're not performing the field sobriety test, then they don't have that video.
Right.
I mean, I had a client that had his knee, right? He's a large man, 6'6", 3-something, right? He had serious knee problems ever since he was a child. He told the officer, who happened to be a state trooper, hey, I want to show you my knee. Like, he pulled up his – it looked bad, right? They still tried to get him to do the one-legged stand. So You want him to do this one-legged stand with this, this injury, that he, a deformity, basically. He's had it all his life. And you're going to use that as a clue? And you're going to put that on, you're going to record that, and we're going to somehow use that in court. So, again, don't participate in your own prosecution. Now, let me be real clear. If you refuse, they can now go get the warrant. Because remember, non-refusal weekend, the magistrate is going to be on call. So the warrant is going to come quicker. I've even heard in some counties, I had a DWI in Collin County, where now they got a whole system. So, like, they can get the warrant, like, super fast, like, within 30 minutes, right? Whereas before, it's, like, 2 hours.
And then the reason why that's so important is because you're, the longer you wait, the longer you have time to get that level down, correct?
Could be. Yeah, so what the state is going to argue is that you were eliminating.
Gotcha.
So that you were already above a 0.08, and when we finally got that blood 2 hours later and you were at a 0.79, that's because you went down. What we argue is that you're absorbing. You are a 0.01 at the time of driving because DWI is operating at the time of driving. It doesn't matter. Well, legally it doesn't matter if you were intoxicated later or if you had a drink in a bar and you were smashed and you sat there for 5 hours and then you went and drove home and you're not intoxicated. You're not guilty of DWI because you weren't driving while intoxicated.
Okay, I
get
it.
But if we are able to extrapolate it back and the state is able to prove that, well, I know he was a 0.079 when we got the blood, but that was 2 hours later. That means he was a 0.20 when we stopped him. He eliminated. That's why it's so important not to participate in your own prosecution. And now refusal weekend makes it a little tougher because the magistrate is on call. So they answer the phone and it's like, boom, here's your warrant. And you get it within 30 minutes. It's harder to argue the whole absorption elimination argument when you got the warrant real close to the time he was driving. It's a lot harder to argue. And actually, Mata v. State kind of sets forth some guidelines. It doesn't say specifically 2 hours, but 2 hours is like what we use.
Gotcha.
So if they got that warrant 2 hours later, we're like, yes, we could work with that. Mm-hmm. But if it's 45 minutes, not so much.
So what happens? So in a non-refusal weekend, magistrate gets the blood alcohol, the blood warrant.
Yeah.
And then you're taken to jail.
Yeah.
Becky doesn't know any attorneys.
Uh-huh.
So now she's in this jail cell she's never been before. What does she do?
She's going to call her family and they're going to bond her out. And she's going to deal with the lawyer later. Like, again, if she knows good, she's not going to participate in her own prosecution. She's going to sit and however long it takes. I understand that Harris County is like 8 to 12 hours to process in and process out. And she'll get out. And life will go on and she'll fight her DWI.
Okay.
You know, but she's not going to call a lawyer that night. Nothing is going to happen that night. You are in law enforcement terrain when you're pulled over. You can't call me. I can't even do nothing. You call me during a DWI stop, you can't put the officer on the phone with me. That's going to do anything but upset the officer.
Right.
To even suggest that I'm going to call this black lawyer, he all of a sudden going to make it go away. Nah, it's nothing that's, I mean, you're going to jail that night. Now, we got to deal with it later, but nothing is happening right then and there. Nothing. Unless you're, you know, connected or you have some sort of privilege that you can invoke.
That's why you asked, was Becky?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I need to know about Becky before we start applying the facts to the law. Yeah.
Okay. And then once they're bonded, once she's bonded out, then that's when the process starts.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you mentioned something about the license being suspended, her license being suspended. Is there any way around not having your license suspended?
Okay. So if you participate in the field sobriety testing, then technically you have not violated the administrative portion of the law. But there's a process within 15 days of you being arrested called an ALR hearing.
Okay.
You can request this. This is not automatic. This doesn't happen automatically. You as a defendant can request to have this. You can request that the officer who was there can attend. It could be in person or it could be over the phone, telephonically. And the point is to argue to keep your license.
Okay.
And so they'll have a fact finder. It could be a lawyer or just some person. For the purposes of that hearing, and they can make a determination on whether you violated the administrative portion.
Okay.
So you could keep your license through a DWI arrest, but a few things would have to happen in order for that
and
to occur.
And what does ALR stand for?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, that's just a criminal legal term that you would need to know.
It's an administrative procedure. I said it wrong once, and I was so mad at myself. So
okay. So this whole non-refusal weekend, your humble opinion is this more of a marketing?
Again, tool? I want to believe that it's for a good purpose, like deterrence, right? Because you have all these people in the city. They're drinking, mm-hmm. and I mean, real talk, you know, you can hurt people when you're driving intoxicated. Like, I've unfortunately made that call from time to time, and I'm impaired. Like, I shouldn't be driving if I'm intoxicated. Nobody should, honestly.
Right.
Because you can hurt yourself, you can hurt others, you can destroy property, you can change lives. So we should never put ourselves in that situation. So I would hope that it's to deter people from doing it. I do believe that it's a money grab as well mm-hmm. for the county. Before bail got reformed in Harris County and all throughout the state, it was huge business for the bail bonds companies. I mean, huge. Because in most cases, or in many cases, you have people that are charged with DWI. They're you know, professionals.
Right.
I mean, they're not quote-unquote criminals.
Right.
Even though they're accused of a crime. They're every day, like you said, coming from the holiday party, coming from the Christmas party, coming from the birthday party. And they got pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 80 even get stopped. So, I mean, it can happen, but it's just such a slim chance of it happening. But when it does, you know, it can change lives. So I think that the ultimate purpose is deterrence.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to believe that because, you know, I've sat in trials where I've seen lives changed as a result of a death from an accident. So I want to believe that that's the reason.
So why do you think then with non-refusal being broadcast on TV and Twitter, and I think I've seen signs even being posted on the highways.
The flashing?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yep.
Why
Marquees.
Are people still driving?
While intoxicated?
While intoxicated.
I don't know. I would just say that, you know, I have a friend who does drive intoxicated, and he's been pulled over, and he's gotten out of it multiple times, and he's a lawyer. And I just think you believe that you have control.
Right.
And that, you know, you can't foresee or fathom a situation where you could lose control of your vehicle.
Right.
You know, you're not thinking about the other person that may hit you, and then now you're getting charged with a DWI, and you may have been fine. They may have just hit you.
Right.
But now you were drinking. And so you now go to jail. And I saw an advertisement that was like, it's 10 grand. You know, that's a $10,000 decision that you make. I would say that is about right.
It's $10,000? Like with the fees and everything, once it's all done?
Like I shared with you, there are criminal defense lawyers that do nothing but DWI. And I know their fees are around 10 grand for a misdemeanor DWI because they're so good at what they do. And they routinely get results. I mean, like week after week, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, dismissal over technicalities because they study the science aspect of it as well as the constitutional. I'm more of a constitutional kind of guy.
Right.
But I do seek to learn the science because that's where a lot of the technical dismissals come. So you have guys that, you know, they charge between $8,000 and $10,000 to represent an individual for DWI, even first time. But notwithstanding the legal fees, you have all of the administrative fees. Your license gets suspended. You got this. God forbid you get on probation. You know, that's monthly fees, fines, court costs, all of that stuff. 10 grand is about right, I would say.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an expensive proposition to get pulled over for DWI.
And then once that's on your record,
Is
there a way to seal or get that expunged off?
Great question. If you're convicted of DWI, then there is no way to get it off your record ever for the rest of your life. President George Bush has a DWI conviction and had one as a president that he had, I guess, when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get a DWI conviction off of your record for a few reasons. Again, conviction. So if you go to trial and win, then we can get an expunction for you, and that totally erases it. But DWI in Texas is not, you can't get deferred. deferred adjudication is a means mm-hmm. to be on community supervision mm-hmm. while you're doing it. It's similar to probation, but it's not the same thing. It's community supervision. But with deferred adjudication, if you complete it successfully, typically you can get your record sealed.
Okay.
So it's still there, but people can't see it.
Right.
DWI in Texas is not subject to deferred. You can't get deferred for DWI. You can only get straight probation.
Hmm.
And so as a probationer, when you plead guilty, you're found guilty, as opposed to with deferred, when you plead guilty, you're not found guilty.
Gotcha.
It's
okay.
Deferred or delayed
right.
while you finish community supervision, and then later on a judge dismisses it. Although it appears as a deferred, it's weird because they say dismiss, but technically it's kind of
right.
not because it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get that for DWI. Deferred is not available for DWI.
So then it would seem to be that for DWI, I'd want to take my chances and have a trial versus just trying to get probation then, correct?
You know the answer. I mean, it just depends.
Okay.
It just
I wanted
depends.
A good answer there.
I mean, you know, everyone is different. Like,
yeah.
I represented a police officer
okay.
who had zero choice in the matter. He had to go to trial.
Okay.
He wanted to take probation and get it over with,
mm-hmm.
but he couldn't because, that would have meant that he lost his job.
Right.
So you really have to look at the individual circumstances, the evidence, whether you think you can win,
mm-hmm.
who the prosecutor is. I mean, you got to look at all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a wonderful discussion.
Fun.
Okay. So it's the last topic that we always talk about is laying to rest.
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to lay to rest on this topic?
On DWI?
Yes. I know I do.
Yeah. I'm going to take a hard curve here and talk about just something that bothers me.
Okay.
My people, when they hire me and
mm-hmm.
us as black lawyers,
mm-hmm.
need to lay to rest this notion that we are somehow not deserving of a fee that's commensurate with the work that we provide our clients.
They don't give you the $8,000 to $10,000?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's this belief sometimes that because you look like my niece
mm-hmm.
or you look like my brother, that you're going to get the brother hookup. We do great work at Brooker Law Firm, okay? We do outstanding work. We get results. You do great work.
Yes.
You don't deserve to be paid any less than our counterparts that do great work as well.
Correct.
And in many cases, our clients may be more comfortable dealing with me
right.
because of the communication abilities and things of that nature. So that is something I need to lay to rest. We need to let all our people know if you feel comfortable enough to hire this attorney, you need to pay his or her fee and not gripe or complain or expect any discounts.
The same as you'd pay someone.
They have no problem walking up into that office and dropping that money.
None.
But when it comes to melanated lawyers,
yes.
many times there's an
yes.
issue.
So mine
That's
is
too much.
Stop driving. If you know that you're tipsy, stop. We're not Superman. We're not Superwoman. Just take the Lyft or take the Uber or find your DD friend, you know, the designated driver, and leave your car there. Talk to the valet. We were somewhere recently and the valet guy told us, hey, we hold people's cars until the next day. I think it was El Tiempo on Washington. They actually hold your car to the next day
nice.
Because they know that that's the bar area. And they're like, we don't want y'all driving, so we'll keep your car here. Of course, it's on your own risk, but
nice.
Your car can stay here, not get towed. So just leave your car because it's worth me leaving my car than spending the $10,000 and the suspended license and all those things.
Right.
So you're not Superman. You're not Superwoman. Take the Lyft. Leave your car. But Quentin, it's such a great time with you, as
Thank
always.
You for having me. I
Thank
really
you so much
it.
For being here. All Where
day.
Can they follow you?
Twitter and Instagram at QB Law, QB Law.
Mm-hmm.
My website is www.qb-law.com. I'm on Facebook, too, just by my name, Quentin Brooker.
Okay.
And can I tell where my offices are located?
Yes.
6464 Savoy Drive, Suite 875, and that's in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
Come and see me.
Go see him. You can follow me on Instagram at SimplyBeingT. You can follow No Further Questions at tons of places. It's No Further Questions on Facebook. It is NFQ Pod on Twitter. No Further Q on Instagram. It's been a pleasure. I miss my co-hosts, Brandy and Sam. But until next time, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Bye, guys.